This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Here is where we talk with knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs that try to help them. Today, we're going to try to answer some questions about what happens with somebody with disabilities, maybe the autism spectrum, interacts with the community and miscommunicates. The title is Keeping Youth with Disabilities Safe, and the guest is Emily Island. And Emily is an award-winning author, researcher, and leader in the autism field. Has collaborated with law enforcement agencies to personally train thousands of police on how to recognize and respond to people with autism and related disabilities. Through her personal insight as a special education college professor, a mother to a son with autism, and her deep work experience that focuses on safety, she was inspired to create Be Safe the Movie, a video modeling DVD that teaches individuals with disabilities how to interact safely with police. Well, good afternoon, Emily. Glad to have you here.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here, Lon.
Okay, well, let's get right into it. What can go wrong when a youth with a disability or autism faces society, has to interact? What are some of the maybe the worst case scenarios that can happen?
Well, one of the first things that happens is that people on the street see somebody with autism or a similar disability and misinterprets their behavior. So the person's having a sensory overload and they're melting down and maybe they're banging their head on the ground and someone thinks, oh my God, I need to call the police. So they call the police. Well, that does not help the situation. Now the person is further overloaded and now the situation can escalate. So basically the public misinterpreting something that a person with an autism or another disability is doing, and we call that actually criminalizing disability, where someone, you know, treats it as if it's a criminal offense, or maybe they're thinking that help is needed from the police when most of the time the person is going to calm down and the caregiver with them is the one who can best help them recover from whatever is going wrong. And adding the police in complicates it and escalates. So that, you know, that's just an everyday situation and it happens to people all the time.
You know, part of it is the media. The media is maybe at fault because in the last year, a couple of the school shootings and the shooting down in California, they identified the person as autistic as if that's an explanation, and that is a real case of misinformation.
Yes, not everybody with autism is violent. It's a very small percentage, and there have been people with autism who have done terrible things, but they also had mental illness that was untreated. In most cases, that's what they're getting down to. You know, they've been victims of bullies, and they haven't gotten the help and attention they needed. And we hope that that's a minority of the autism population. But this is a very relevant topic because 2% of the child population is now being diagnosed with autism. It's 1 in 68 children. And 1 in 68 children and 1 in 42 boys.
Okay, so the odds are when we see something going on, that going south in interaction with the police or the young people, The odds are fairly good. It could be somebody that's reacting to their autism. I'll give a couple examples. You sent a material you sent to me. There's a case of Arlo and Joshua. Could you explain a little bit about those and what happened and almost tragic results?
Yes. Arlo was a nonverbal young man with autism, and he was fascinated by things with wheels. And one day, outside a restaurant, he saw a police motorcycle with nobody on it, so he got on. And then the motorcycle officer came out of the restaurant and told him to get off, but Arlo didn't move. And when the officer tried to forcibly remove him, Arlo fought back, broke the officer's nose, and was arrested for assaulting an officer. So this kind of shows us...
Why do you think he didn't respond or move? Sensory overload and he just froze?
Well, a lot of people with autism have a terrible time processing language. They are not necessarily good at following directions, even from people they know. And then to follow directions from a stranger, they don't recognize authority figures necessarily. That's a social thing that we respond to the uniform and the demeanor and all that. But those nonverbal cues aren't really evident to someone with autism, and, you know, typically. So, and the other thing would be that he was engaged in his area of fascination. So it's kind of like the rest of his brain shuts down, and this heavy focus on the object supersedes everything else.
He was sort of obsessed.
If you don't have autism, it could be obsession. But if you do have autism, it's your restrictive and repetitive interest that is a feature of autism. It's not a separate thing. If you can't take medication and have that go away in autism, it's one of the core features.
Mm-hmm. How did that eventually work out? Did you ever get the rest of the story?
I didn't get the rest of the story. But I do know that once somebody with autism is in the court system, it's very hard to help people understand the mitigating circumstances that this person, you know, doesn't respond to instructions and other things like that. But then people would say, well, then what are they doing out in the community? Well, we were trying to find a balance of integrating people with all types of disabilities into the community where they belong, but also helping them build the skills so that they are safe when they're there.
Okay. I forgot to mention earlier, but for our listeners, ones that are listening live, we do have a chat function. If you're at k4hd.com, at the lower right is a general chat, and we welcome your questions, and we'll try to respond to them. You can type in your questions and or however you're accessing it, and we'll try to answer them. So that chat function is there, and we can get some interactivity going on. Well, how about Joshua? That was a little more interesting.
Oh. Is Joshua the one who went to jail? I'm not sure which one Joshua was.
Yeah, he went to jail, and I guess it worked out when they finally got the mother there, and the mother could advocate for him. Before that, he was being treated as a common criminal.
Yes, what happened was Joshua was pulled over for speeding, and when the police spoke to him, he couldn't answer, and they thought he was on drugs, and they said to him, "Did you take drugs today?" And he said, "Yes," because he had taken vitamins, and in his mind, if you buy it at a drugstore, it's a drug. So they got him to get out of the car and walk the line for sobriety, field sobriety test, and he failed. And that's because he has brain lesions, and he never can walk a line under any circumstances. He just doesn't have the balance. So because he couldn't advocate for himself and because he was acting strangely and sending up lots of red flags, the police took him to jail. And when you arrive at a jail, the watch commander asks you if anything's wrong, like if you have any special needs or if you're taking meds. And he didn't tell about any of that because he has a very hard time communicating. So they put him in jail while they waited for the blood test to come back on his sobriety. And his mother wondered why he never came home that night. She had no idea what happened to him. And so she went to bed thinking he was just coming in late. And when she woke up and he wasn't home, she totally panicked and started calling all the hospitals and police stations till she finally found him. And he was over 21, so the police didn't have to tell anybody where he was. So this shows us all sorts of vulnerabilities and problems that we need to anticipate and address. For example, this young man could have worn a medical ID on his left wrist that the police would see when he puts his hand on the steering wheel so that they could know that he has special needs and that he's not intoxicated. And also he could have a partial conservatorship so that his mother would be notified, even though he's over the age of 21, that she would have some aspects of care for him, especially when he gets in a situation that he can't manage on his own.
Okay, well, we have a few questions from our listeners. One is is your name as Emily Island, and you produced the movie Be Safe. What's the full title of the movie?
Be Safe.
Or video.
The movie, How to Interact Safely with the Police. And I made it with Joey Travolta, John Travolta's brother. Joey runs a film studio for young adults with disabilities in California. And so my actors are people with disabilities interacting with real police. And behind the scenes are camera people, our set dressers, makeup, are also people with a variety of disabilities. So my movie's very authentic. We show real people with disabilities interacting with real police and showing us how it should be done.
Okay, and we got some more questions, and the answers to those about the more information and where you can find out more information we'll cover in the last few minutes of this. They do ask a question. Are you familiar with this? What do you think about the guy who beat up the autistic boy in Florida? Are you familiar with that?
I am not sure of all the details. I think it was just in the news. Well, personally, I think it's horrible when it's like a form of hate crime, as far as I'm concerned, when people attack people with disabilities who are the least able to defend themselves. And I have to tell you that my own son was assaulted in class during school with the teacher present when he was a freshman in high school. So I know the pain of it. And back then, you know, nothing happened. Well, the boy got some discipline against him, the perpetrator, but my son was totally traumatized and had to change schools. And, you know, it was a disaster, and he had suffered years of bullying. And I do feel that kids with autism, well, we know already 88% of people with autism are bullied. And then, you know, if it goes so far that someone actually beats them up, it's just unconscionable, you know.
Well, let's. Why don't you tell a little bit of your personal story, like what moved you to create the movie Be Safe? And I think it was part of the incidents like you just mentioned, and I'm sure there's a lot more in that. Could you just tell a little bit of your personal story, how you came to put so much time into this?
Sure. So I am the mom of a young man with autism, and I also worked as an advocate for 300 families in my city, Santa Clarita, California. And in 1 week... in January, I remember about 10 years ago, two of my clients with pretty significant autism were arrested at school in the same week. And I said, what is going on? One of the boys had committed a felony crime, and the police came to school and questioned him without any adult present. And he confessed to a felony crime on tape and was prosecuted. 14 years old, he had the mental capacity of a 9-year-old. But because he could answer one question, do you know the difference between right and wrong? He said, yes, I do. And that allows the police to continue questioning. This, in our state, California, that's called the Gladys R. question. And that is the threshold measure to decide whether or not a person over the age of 8 can be questioned by the police without an adult present. And here's this boy who has no idea what he should or shouldn't be telling, you know, to ask for help. I said to him later, I said, why didn't you ask for a lawyer? And he said, Emily, there aren't any lawyers at school, and anyways, I'm just a kid. How would I pay for one? So this is not someone who knew how to protect his rights. Even though he looked like every other kid on campus, developmentally he wasn't. And, you know, that case was fully prosecuted, and we intervened with the court psychologist to produce evidence about mitigating circumstances that he didn't understand when he committed the crime, and he didn't understand when he confessed to it. And therefore, he was given what's called a diversion, and he was allowed to get rehabilitation instead of going to juvenile hall. So that was the beginning of my inspiration, and also preventing tragedies of, you know, people with autism getting shot because they fight with the police or getting tasered. I know a little boy, 12 years old, severe autism in an elementary school, was tasered when things escalated when he wouldn't wait in line on picture day. next thing we know, he kicks the police who come to calm him down, gets tasered in front of the whole class, the whole school on the playground. So
wow.
We want to prevent these things.
Mm-hmm. And and it sounds to me like the one you were mentioning, that 9-year-old that had committed the felony, that sounds like there's a developmental delay also in addition to the autism, because that isn't necessarily a part of autism, is it?
Well, this boy was 14 and functioned like a 9-year-old or less. He had some cognitive delay with his autism, but many people with autism it is a developmental disability, so the delays can be cognitive or they can be in language or in their social understanding, but the delays are there. But this guy, yeah, he had a couple things going on, but he didn't look like it. So the vulnerability is that this is an invisible disability when we're talking about autism. So the police expect him to behave and respond like everybody else who looks typical. Sometimes mm-hmm. if someone has, say, for example, Down syndrome and has a recognizable disability, the police can tune into that. But when someone has an invisible disability, bipolar disorder, attention deficit, you know, autism, OCD, the police can't read that very easily.
Yeah, they'd have to be trained, and that sounds like that's what you're trying to do. Well, tell us about the making of the movie Be Safe.
Mm-hmm.
I think you used disabled or people with disabilities, and you real policemen as well. They'll just tell about how you went about doing it.
Sure. Well, Joey treats his filmmakers like professionals, so I had to go to the young people with disabilities and ask and explain my movie and ask them if they would make it. And as I was explaining the things we wanted to teach, like follow instructions from the police and stay calm when you meet them and tell the police about your disability, things we wanted to show in the movie, one of the boys in the class said, "Well, you know, Emily, I think this would help a lot of people, not just people with autism." And that's true, because people have been calling me about Ferguson, Missouri, and saying that this kind of lesson would help lots of people who need to learn to be safe around the police. But what we did is we wrote a script, and we have 7 different scenarios interacting with police and paramedics. And we first front load, we give all the basic information and build some vocabulary. Then we show a scenario. Like one of our scenarios is a boy who didn't do anything wrong, and he's just sitting waiting for the bus, and the police come thinking that he's an armed robber because he matches a description, and they're out looking for a guy who committed a robbery, which we witnessed in the movie. And he didn't do anything wrong, but he follows all the instructions from the police and does everything they say, and then they figure out they're wrong and they let him go. And after that scenario, and after each scenario, we interview the police, the boy involved, or the young people involved, and ask them what they were thinking, why did they do certain things, and then our narrator comes back and sums it all up and gives the takeaway points. So it's repetitive, but it's very carefully structured, actually, to maximize comprehension so we can reach all kind of learners of every verbal and cognitive level.
Okay, we have a question from a visitor that sort of, or a viewer that applies to this. How does the law not see the difference? Could you explain a little bit of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have autism, you look like someone who doesn't have autism. So there's no physical way of recognizing autism. It's recognized behaviorally. However, the behaviors look like other things. So the first thing that the police think when they meet people with autism is usually that they are intoxicated or taking drugs. So say, for example, they see someone pacing, flapping, rocking, talking to themselves. My son would pace in public, and someone might think, "What's up with this guy?" and call the police. Or if, you know, even though he's an mm-hmm. accountant and drives a car and lives in his apartment, he could pace in public. And that's what gets misinterpreted. I've trained 4,000 LAPD myself, and we've told them how to recognize the signs, like the communication plus the behavior plus the lack of social understanding. They have to put the pieces together. And it's not that easy, really, to recognize the signs and not interpret it as something else. So that's why we have one episode of the movie is tell the police about your disability. And we show different ways to do that, including keeping a card in your wallet with your state ID and asking permission to take it out. For example, my son, I gave him this card to carry, and then he went to get it out of his pocket when he met the police. Well, what do you think the police think he's getting out of his pocket?
Mm-hmm.
So here I am thinking I'm teaching him to be safe, and instead I was setting him up because clearly the police are going to think he's reaching for a weapon. So now we teach to carry something to help identify you to the police and then get it out safely or wear it on your wrist.
Are the young people, are they respond to that? Do they get it?
They're totally getting it. I'm doing something called interactive screenings, and I'm traveling around the country doing it. And it's a community event where we bring together young adults with disabilities, their parents, teachers, therapists, and the local police. And we show scenes from Be Safe, and then we do activities out of the curriculum that I wrote to go along with it. So the police from the neighborhood are meeting and greeting our young people and interacting with them to help build safety skills. And it's absolutely magic. I say I create the structure, and then the magic happens, and it does. We have pictures on my website, which is besafethemovie.com. We have more and more pictures of the wonderful things that are happening and how we're building mutual understanding between the police and young adults and teens in our communities with disabilities. The program's not necessarily for children. It could benefit children, but it's really designed to prepare our young adults to go out into the community. So say from the age of 12 and up could really benefit from seeing the movie and doing the activities in the curriculum, which anybody can purchase.
It sounds like the first step for the police is if they see somebody acting odd to ask the question, is it what they think it is, or could it be some sort of autistic? Just to ask that question and consider the possibility. That sounds like the first step that the police should learn.
Absolutely, and that is what we're teaching them. And while I was teaching them those things, they said to me, you know, Emily, if someone with autism fights with us, we have to fight back and we have to win, whether they have autism or not. And I think that's one of the scariest things I ever heard, but one of the absolute truths. So I thought, well, if that's what's going to happen, we have to teach people with autism and other disabilities not to fight. So they also said, if someone with autism runs, we have to chase them. So in our movie, we show stay where you are when you meet the police. Because it has to be a two-sided solution. We can't put all the responsibility on the police to be experts on every disability and every special need. We can prevent problems in the first place, I think, and prevent escalation by being sure we're teaching these safety skills. And in fact, one of the people who previewed the movie worked in the Department of Education of a particular state, I won't say which one, and she said, we should be teaching this to every single student in every high school, especially our young adults with disabilities. Everybody should be getting exposed to this material and this information, because if we can't leave safety to chance, if we don't teach mm-hmm. these skills, we're putting people out there without the tools and skills they need to be safe.
Okay. Well, I have a question, and I take it from one of our listeners, and they asked, do you think this is going to work with the law? Could you give some examples of how it seems to have taken how a student or a policeman acted differently after your training?
Yes. Well, I was in Alaska recently doing a Be Safe training, and two officers came, and we had about 20 young people. And when an officer finished, he had done several activities during our event. For example, he went around the room and everybody got to ask him for help. We have a board game with dice, and they roll the dice and it says, I found this wallet. So then the officer says, oh, you found a wallet? Where did it happen? And they have this conversation around this scenario that we set up. And for some people, it's the first time they ever spoke to the police. For some people, it was the first time they ever said more than one thing to the police. In other words, they viewed the police as helpers, they opened the conversation, they improved their comfort levels, and the police got to see all the different ways people in the room communicated, and he adapted for that. So it was a wonderful experience for the police to be exposed to all different kinds of people that he would be meeting on the beat, you know, someday. And he said to me afterwards that he wanted to do Be Safe in his high school because he happened to be a school resource officer. he said he wanted to show one episode of the movie and do an activity with the students every week for 7 weeks. And I said, you're on. You know, I gave him a copy so he could go and do that, because he loved the activities we did and he understood how important it was. And now he's going to go and make a difference at his school for every student with disabilities.
Okay, so you're saying the police are open to this,
yeah.
Open to, and it's working, and so that sounds very good. So you're catching both sides of them.
Yes, and a success story with the young people. There's a boy named Kevin Hosseini. He's a very famous man with autism. He's 18, and he's an artist, and his art has been shown in Russia. And he previewed Be Safe, and he said, after I watched Be Safe, I learned to stay where I am when I meet the police, not to fight or argue. I learned to tell them about my autism and to cooperate. I mean, here's this guy who's considered, you know, quite impacted by his autism. He picked up every lesson. He said, I learned what a badge was, and that really shocked me and made me see that there are information gaps in the way people with autism perceive things. But the most interesting thing about Kevin, he said he had already been arrested 3 times and ran from the police every time, and it didn't go well. They did chase him, but by watching the movie, he understood what he didn't learn from real life and what he didn't learn from being told. He learned it from video modeling, and that's the beauty. That's why I use video modeling to present this material, because we know it works. There's research that shows that this is an effective method for people with autism and other disabilities. And my vision is to that we're planting these positive videos in people's memory so that when a real situation comes up, their video plays in their head and they do the right thing rather than something they saw on television or some other thing that's not going to turn out well.
Well, it sounds like a real key to this and to the learning, and this is a standard, and any teacher would understand that, it's to experience the experiential, the actually do it in the role modeling is very, very key, because if you tell somebody something, it might or might not sink in, but if you do it, it's much better. That sounds like that's a key to it.
It is, and so I made the movie, and then I wrote a 300-page curriculum to go along with it for people who needed more help, and one of the things in the curriculum is the script for every scenario in the movie. So we do encourage everybody to role play the different scenarios and practice following instructions from the police. And the beauty of the role play is then the student can become the police in the scenario and give the commands and just get that more familiar with all the different police procedures and what you should be doing in those kind of situations.
Okay, we have a question here, and I think I have a partial answer. The question is there a program that is bringing awareness to this? And it sounds like you are the program. Is there more to it than just your activities?
Well, I used to be the president of the Autism Society of LA, and I've written other books and done other things, but I've left them all behind to just let people know about Be Safe, the movie, and Be Safe, the teaching edition, to get these tools in people's hands, to come into different communities and do interactive screenings. And I actually also train parents and teachers in a certificate course to understand these materials and learn how to maximize effectiveness of them. And that I'm traveling all over the country and to Mexico. I do all my work in Spanish as well. Be Safe has Spanish subtitles. I'm currently translating the curriculum into Spanish. And so we want to get the word out. We want to be proactive about safety and not leave safety to chance.
So you work with people everywhere. You're in Southern California, but you work everywhere?
Yep, people just book me to come to their community, and I can do just an interactive screening there, or I can just train people, local people, to understand and use these materials, or I can do both. And that's what's keeping me very busy, and I'm very happy about that. But also, this is for home use. People can buy the materials and use them at home because I made it as simple as humanly possible. Being a mom, being a teacher, I know, you know, we want something that's easy to use and effective, and that's what I tried to create. So it goes from the home to the schools to the community level, and it's really, people are having such a positive response to it and understand the importance of it.
Now, you alluded to a couple of these things, the safety message. Could you talk a little bit more about the specific safety messages you had in mind in producing this and promoting it?
Yes. The first safety message is to prevent problems in the first place by helping people understand what laws are and how to follow them. So people get in trouble with the police if they break the law. So what if they don't break the law? Problem solved. So we begin with exploring what laws are. Secondly, law enforcement officers help us be safe. Many people with autism and similar disabilities are afraid of the police, and that's the last thing the police want. They want people to be able to come to them for help. So we want to create that comfort level while at the same time pointing out that there are boundaries. You don't touch the police or their equipment, including their dog. So that's the third lesson is, about the uniforms and safety tools. And that's a wonderful, at our interactive screenings, after we see this episode of the movie, two police get up in front of the room. One is the model and one is the narrator, and they explain everything on their duty belts and their uniform, and they take the cartridge out and let the students hear the sound of the taser. And then the students ask questions like, well, how much does all that stuff weigh? I mean, the kids are so engaged. They're thinking of these wonderful questions. You know, how many bullets can your bulletproof vest keep out? So it's so engaging and interesting, but the police then say, remember, never touch us or our stuff. Because why are people with autism being shot? Because they reach for the policeman's gun. Anybody's going to get shot who reaches for a policeman's gun. We know that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And yes, another one is stay where you are when we meet the police, and the next one is disclosing your disability. My controversial episode is the right to remain silent, because I teach people with disabilities to give their name and ask for a lawyer because they have such a hard time judging what to say and what not to say. They might agree to something, a leading question. It's much safer for someone with a disability to ask for a lawyer. And the police don't particularly, many police don't like that I'm teaching that. However, if someone doesn't understand their right to remain silent, then they can't protect it. So our population needs special help to learn to remain silent. And the police tell their own family members to do the same thing. So if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for my people.
You know, there's this bit of a suspicious of the police, I think, in our society. I saw a episode of John Stossel on TV, and where he just got a policeman uniform, and there's a lot of deference and almost concern or fear from the people when they saw a policeman. You know, it's like when somebody, when you're driving and a police car gets behind you, you don't think, well, they're there to serve and protect me. They think, oh my gosh, if I do something wrong, I'll get a ticket. I would think that would be something that you would have to overcome in order to get the kids, especially the young people, especially to respond. Have you found that? Is it pretty easy to get through that?
Well, what's interesting is, yes, we're all afraid of the police, and we're all nervous around the police. So we actually address that in the film, and we have one of our actors say, yeah, I'm nervous around the police, but because he was being nice to me and friendly, I was nice and friendly back. And kind of give him the idea that you reciprocate what you're getting. If the police aren't mad at you, then don't be nervous and don't be mad at them, you know. So we try to help them learn to, you know, respond to the police as and see them as helpers, because fear is a bad thing. Fear makes people panic and run, and panic and running are not good when you're around the police. I know this myself. My husband's car was stolen last week, and the guy who stole it was driving down the road, and the police were behind him, and the guy panicked and ran and rolled the car and destroyed it, totaled his car. But the police didn't have their lights on, but the guy just panicked and ran because he knew he had done something wrong. Mm-hmm. And so we all have this fight-or-flight response when it comes to the police, but neither one is good, and most of us try to repress those urges and just, you know, manage the situation we're in. But we want to help people with disabilities really have tools in their toolbox for managing the situation.
Okay, you do what is called a Be Safe Interactive Screening, a community safety event. Could you talk a little bit more how that's done and who's involved?
Mm-hmm. Well, any community organization can book with me to bring that to their community. So far, the Autism Society of Alaska has brought me in, and different community organizations who want to be the host, and they do things like set up the place and, you know, the logistics, and I'm the content person, and I'm also the person that contacts the local police and says, we're doing this interactive screening and we'd like you to send officers to interact with our young people, and here's what you'll be doing with them. Now, we just had one in Culver City, and the police chief himself came and interacted with our students with two captains, a lieutenant, and another officer. So, and the mayor came too. So it's really a wonderful way for the community to come together to create this mutual understanding and this positive interaction. And, you know, the room was just like glowing with good, positive feelings on the part of everybody there. Everybody there, including, you know, people who had been afraid of the police, found out, well, hey, this guy's nice. He's nice to me. And sometimes a general fear can be allayed a little bit by creating a personal relationship. And the other good part of having an interactive screening is the police get to see who in their community has special needs and how they might help them in the future. So they get a little bit of practice communicating, interacting with that person. And then later, maybe they see the person out on the street in trouble and they're like, oh, I know that guy. That's another really wonderful side effect of an interactive screening.
Okay, so that's a whole community that you're trying to get and to develop. Sounds like the town of Ferguson could have used some of that here in this last year or so, that type of communication. We've been talking primarily about autistic young people. How about other disabilities, maybe learning disabilities or some other things not on the spectrum?
Right.
What do you do with that?
We're positive that Be Safe can help people with any kind of special learning needs because it's good teaching. So it can help everybody. And I wrote the curriculum at what's called differentiated, where, say, for example, somebody is at the one-word level in their understanding. We present 110 safety words in Be Safe at the word level, but we also have it for people who have a lot of verbal skills, a lot of world knowledge, and they have to come up with their own definitions and their own personal examples for each of those safety words. So basically, we make it suitable to every kind of learner so they all get the experience. When we talk about what a law is, some people are going to learn about stopping at the stop sign or crossing with the crosswalk, and someone else is going to learn about laws that govern internet safety. You know, depending on their needs and the way they experience the world, and, you know, we're going to tailor the teaching to whatever it is to help them really internalize this information and apply it to their own lives.
Okay.
I just want to go back to the Ferguson thing. The city of a woman from the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, contacted me yesterday and says, we don't want to be the next Ferguson. We want to do something today for our entire community, not just the disability community, but we want to connect the police and our community so we can promote mutual understanding and build safety skills. And so they're trying to bring me in to do an interactive screening there. So she doesn't see it as a disability issue. She sees it as a community issue, and I think it will work perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it sounds right. Are you getting just that one call, or are you getting more calls like that?
Getting lots of calls. And when NPR covered the story of Be Safe on Saturday, they tied it to Ferguson also. And, you know, this is a community solution, and it doesn't matter what the difference is. It's building that trust and relationships that connect the police and the community, or else. If the police and the community aren't connected and don't have trust, we know what happens then. I mean, we saw it.
Absolutely. We've been watching it the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's your background? Have you had a background with law enforcement and training before you did the movie, or what's your involvement with the law enforcement?
Well, my education was, I was a political science and Spanish major, and then I was a stay-at-home mom for 15 years. Then I got active in the autism and advocacy community and became the president of the Autism Society of Los Angeles. And my connection to law enforcement happened when the LAPD came to us and said, "We don't know enough about autism. Will you please train us?" And so as a volunteer for the Autism Society, I wrote the training and implemented it and trained other people to do the training, and I still do it. And I also then became a contractor and created some internal trainings for the LAPD called Experience Autism, where we teach the police to understand autism by experiencing simulations that let them understand what it feels like to have a sensory problem or have a communication difficulty or have motor problems. So they experience the different features of autism and activities, and then it all comes together for them. And some of the officers who've taken my Experience Autism course have then done interactive screenings and said that they just loved getting to meet people with autism and other disabilities so that it made sense. They could apply, you know, something they learned and experienced, but then they see and meet people and really understand.
Okay. One of our listeners has actually it's three questions, but they're all related. How long did it take to film the movie? How many disabled people work in the movie? And was it a fun experience to make the movie?
I loved making Be Safe. I loved working with Joey Travolta and the students at Inclusion Films. We actually shot the entire film in about 5 days, but I wrote my script in 2006, but I couldn't get... I was financed the entire thing, but I was on a committee where I met Joey Travolta, and in about 2009 realized he was the guy to make my film because I wanted it to be made by people with disabilities and I wanted them to be my actors when I saw that that was the opportunity. And it took him 3 years to fit me into his schedule. One thing that was really interesting, I wrote the script, and he got the police from Bakersfield to be my actors, real police, and they looked at my script and said, "We would never say that. We would never do that." And I'm like, "Okay, just use the script as a guideline and do what you do and say what you say." And that's exactly what happened, and that's why the movie is so authentic, because it's not scripted. It's just, okay, here's an arrest scene. Do what you do in an arrest scene, and our young actor just goes along with it. That was beautiful, you know. And I think actual shooting time, I think it took us 5 days to film. We got it. Joey and I auditioned actresses to be the narrator. The narrator ties the entire story together and all the learning points. And we auditioned 70 girls, and the last girl who came in was named Tori Fritz. And she said her lines, and I looked at her and I said, "Tori, why is it that I think you totally understand what you're saying, and you're just saying it so beautifully?" She says, "Oh, well, I have a brother with Down syndrome, so I'm just picturing myself explaining all this to him." And Joey and I looked at each other like she got the job, you know. She totally delivers the message because it's from her heart. She's inspired. And people say it's so easy to understand, and that's not a coincidence. I worked very hard to make it very easy to understand. Even the director said, "Emily, your movie's so repetitive." I said, "That's on purpose, because that's what it takes."
Well, you know, any regular kids, any teacher in the classroom know you have to repeat something several times before it sinks in with everybody. So repetition is a sort of a universal thing. Well, I have another question. How do you use it, train the police to, you know, specifically train the police on that? Or do you do that to where you get to go to a police station or something and work with all the police? Or is it always a mixed?
I have different programs I do. Be Safe is the one that resulted from my experience with the police when I realized what we need to be teaching our young people from the police perspective. But I also do another program called Experience Autism, which is experiential learning for a group of police. I have done trainings called roll call trainings, where you go to a station and you have 20 minutes with the police. I do all sorts of different trainings because they're all necessary.
Well, it sounds like you're on a crusade.
Well, I have made it my mission and my passion, and, you know, my goal is to prevent one more heartbreak. You know, I don't ever want to be that mother that gets a call that something terrible happened to her child because he mixed it up with the police. And my heart breaks when I see the stories. And, you know, I also feel bad for the police because they don't want to kill anybody ever. That's not why they got into the business. And they also don't want to be the one who gets killed either at the end of the day. They want to go home to their family. So if we keep all of that in mind, we can all do our part to keep everybody safe.
Mm-hmm. And have you? Could you share some of the reactions you've gotten after you've done a training session and what some people have said and the indications that you've made a difference?
Well, one woman, she has a very big son with autism. He's over 6 feet tall, you know, over 200 pounds, very imposing looking, but he doesn't understand that much, you know, or he looks like he doesn't understand, and maybe it would be hard for people to interact with him. She said that being at the interactive screening in Culver City last Wednesday was an indelible event on their family's life. Hmm. That was pretty major for me. They're indelible. Mm-hmm. They'll never forget it. They both understood, and, you know, they both had time with the police. That's one of the things about the movie is at the end, we know people have questions that aren't relevant to my present or in our activities. So at the end, we let anybody who wants to try on handcuffs, and that's an informal part of the day. And that's when those families get up close and personal with the police and they get their time to ask that question or talk about a concern or a worry. And it's really, that's one of the most positive things that happens. Then they pose for pictures with the police. I mean, to me, that's an outcome, a fabulous outcome of, you know, creating relationships and connections.
Mm-hmm. How long ago, when was the movie completed? Or the
It came out on about Halloween last year, so it's Be Safe, the movie. It's been out for about a year, but now we're getting some attention drawn to it so that people know it's out there for them. And the Be Safe Teaching Edition, that's the movie plus the companion curriculum, and that's what I recommend for anyone who really wants to go in depth into the teaching of beyond just watching the movie, but get into some additional materials and resources that I've created and gathered to really bring it home to every learner.
Do you think you might have to do a sequel at some time? It's still fairly current if it's less than a year old, but
yes. Well, lots of people are asking, can you teach this? Can you teach that? And I have to say, I have to help get Be Safe out there first before I can do a sequel. But yeah, I could see it's very natural. The last episode of Be Safe is an interaction with paramedics. It teaches people how to call 911 and what happens when the ambulance arrives. And it's a fabulous scene that I didn't expect, but Joey was able to get an ambulance, so we filmed it without a script. And I had to go back and write the script for it. And boy, the number of questions the paramedics ask is so difficult for anybody, especially if you're hurt, and then so difficult for someone with a communication disorder, you know, or someone who doesn't know the answers. So it really helps prepare. So I could see, similar to the paramedic scene, expanding in other areas of safety.
Okay, well, I'm told we have 3 minutes left, so why don't you tell people sort of a brief summary of what you're doing, how do you spell your name, because your last name, if you hear it pronounced, you probably spell it wrong, and how they could find out more information or how they can get a hold of you. You have about 2 minutes.
Okay, my name is Emily Iland, I-L-A-N-D. I'm in Los Angeles, California. My movie is Be Safe, the Movie, How to Interact Safely with the Police. The curriculum is called Be Safe Teaching Edition, and that includes the movie plus 300 pages of teaching materials. All of this is available at besafethemovie.com. We would love you to like us on Facebook so you can know where we're going to be and what we'll be doing if we're going to be in your neighborhood. And to contact me, it's Emily at besafethemovie.com, all one word, besafethemovie.com. So I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this, and I really hope that people will take responsibility for safety and for teaching safety and not leave safety to chance, because we can't afford that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Emily. I really appreciate your taking the time on this. It's been enlightening and actually inspiring on this. But thanks, Emily, and good luck.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Been talking with Emily Island, keeping youth with disabilities safe, and particularly in interactions with the police but in other situations. This is K4HD.com, and be sure to come back next Tuesday when we'll have another guest.